Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect together and learn in a virtual setting. Today's program is one that I think everyone can identify with, and it's called Treating Chronic Exhaustion. Who hasn't suffered from that or continues to suffer from that? We are so pleased to have as our presenter, Rabbi Doron Lazarus from South Bend, Indiana, who will be telling us his experiences and how we can handle the situation. Rabbi Lazarus's full bio should be in the emails you received on this program and on the SPIRIT website. It's my honor and pleasure to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Rabbi Lazarus. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Okay, and thank you very much to Rabbi Steinig for hosting us. It's a real pleasure to be here. We obviously know the famous work of the OU and what they do for Jews around the world of all walks of life, demographics, and backgrounds. It's really an honor to be invited to speak at such an event. And I also welcome my father joining us from San Diego. It's an honor to speak to him as well. I wanted to give a little background to the topic, and then I'll give a little background to myself, and then we can dive in. Chronic exhaustion or chronic fatigue syndrome, as others call it, is an epidemic in our society. About 40% of Americans feel fatigued on a regular basis. One in five patients that go into their doctor's office have some form of chronic fatigue syndrome. So this is not just a minor issue. This is a major issue that's really affecting our society and the world at large. We have an energy deficiency as a people, as humanity are really struggling with this. So it's something that really, you know, kind of it's anybody who's been through it or is going through it or knows someone else that's gone through it knows how significant this can be. Oftentimes it's misunderstood by well-meaning people. People will think, oh, you're lazy. Oh, you're just lack of motivation. You're clearly not driven in life. And most people that I speak to that struggle with this, it's exactly the opposite. These are people that have tremendous amount of motivation. They have a tremendous amount of love for life, but they feel like they're almost being chained down. The more that they try to push themselves, it's just dragging this very heavy, tired, exhausted body around. And it's very debilitating. It's hard to hold down a job. It's hard to be an active parent, to be in relationships, and all the things that we're trying to do, fighting that constant exhaustion. No matter how much they sleep, it still seems to come back. So we really want to be able to speak about this. I'll just give a little background of mine. I grew up in San Diego. My father is a geriatric specialist, soon retiring after many decades of successful practice. Very proud of him. I grew up, I went to UCLA. I studied psychobiology. I was pre-med at the time. I didn't exactly fit into the mold for a number of reasons to become a doctor. I wasn't very interested in the studies. I didn't like the way that the system was going. So of course, like any Jewish boy, I thought I'd become a rabbi instead. I ended up going and spending 7 years in Israel, becoming a rabbi. I was working in full-time nonprofits when we decided to make the transition out of the nonprofit world and decided to open our own business, which was really around the time that the COVID crisis was taking over the world. I thought, look, I myself had insomnia in the past. I ended up being hooked on sleeping pills for a small time in my life. And I saw how debilitating that was. And I saw how liberating it was personally being able to cure that from the inside out. It was not something that they taught us at UCLA studying psychobiology and how to do, but it was something that really gave me a tremendous insight into my own mind and how insomnia works, how sleep works, how the human mind and the body works. And that was something that I felt very empowered to. So I thought, look, if I'm going to start a business, I'll create my own online sleep coaching practice. That sounds fun. So lo and behold, I became a certified sleep science coach. ended up training to become a hypnotherapist as well. So we, you know, we do a lot of things. And part in the process, the more clients that I met, we kind of expanded our practice out to work with different types of materials, different types of clients, different types of issues, one of them being chronic exhaustion, which a lot of patients would come to me just always tired, not sure why, and you know, we'd have to dive in. Everything that we're going to discuss today is really just the outline, just the basics. I just want to run you through the thought process of what happens when someone is struggling with chronic fatigue. But before we get there, let's just make this small disclaimer over here. Okay, the content of this presentation or any product or service offered in this presentation is provided only for informational and educational purposes only. It's not medical advice, not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure or prevent any disease, disorder, medical condition. It should never replace or any advice given to you by your physician or any licensed healthcare provider. So once we've got through that, and certainly, as I tell all my clients, your doctor is a great place to start. Obviously, there's basic testing, thyroid issues, iron deficiencies. God forbid they want to screen for any disease and blood work and whatever they're looking for. Definitely start with your doctor. And all of this, many of my clients come to me after not seeing any results in the conventional medical world. And we'll speak about what the other options look like in that. But certainly, this is just for informational purposes, not medical advice from this talk. Okay, and to lighten things up over here, I'm sorry, Tom, but you don't have chronic fatigue syndrome if it only occurs when you're going to see your in-laws, okay? So this is something that people carry with them, not just periodically, but something that happens all the time. Okay, is it a sleep issue? Okay, so again, somebody comes to me and they say, Daron, I'm constantly tired, I'm dragging along, I'm always exhausted, I have brain fog, I feel weak, feel fatigued, help me. So essentially what we start off asking is one question. Is it a sleep issue? Is it not a sleep issue? Now, obviously some people know if before we kind of run and decide, oh, is this a medical issue? What medical testing do you have? Is it a other issue? Let's address sleep. Sleep is, in my experience, one of the foundations of our health, one of the foundations of our mood, energy, concentration, focus, immunity. There's really no part of our body or mind that's not affected by our sleep cycle. And if a person knows that, hey, I'm sleeping poorly, I'm not getting enough hours, I can't fall asleep, I can't stay asleep, I feel very restless when I sleep, all of those are issues. Let's start with the sleep before we try to cure your chronic fatigue on another side of things. Let's begin with the sleep. So if someone comes to me and they know, or at least we want to understand, do you have a sleep issue? We can break that down into three issues because there are only three factors that could be the cause of a sleep issue. And again, I try to simplify things. It just helps us think clearly and logically through the issue, what could be the issue at hand. So someone comes to me, they have a sleep issue. I say, okay, let's break it down. It could only be three things. Is a sleep issue in your mind? Is a sleep issue in your body? Or is a sleep issue in your breathing? And most people have an insight. Sometimes we have to do testing, and I'll just describe a little bit of what that is. But let's take a look and go over some of these key factors that I see a lot in my practice. Is your sleep issue in your mind? Number one thing that I see in my practice day in and day out is sleep anxiety. Here's how it looks. Your sleep gets thrown off for whatever reason. Maybe you were traveling, maybe you had a baby, maybe you were in the hospital, maybe you just had a stressed out experience in life, whatever it was. And that might have thrown your sleep off temporarily, but then something else happens. Then you get this little thought that says, I wonder what happens if you don't sleep tonight. I wonder how long you go on without sleeping. How did you fall asleep anyways? When are you going to sleep next? How are you going to cure your sleep issue? And this wave of anxiety, the brain now registers sleep as a threat, as something that has to be run after, chased after, pursued or not pursued. And that is, in my experience, the number one sleep issue is sleep anxiety. Okay. Other issues might include things like a phobia. A phobia could be almost an illogical, irrational fear regarding sleep. could be that, you know, someone's going to get hurt in my sleep. I'm currently working with a client who's afraid of dying in her sleep. All of those are very real issues. It's coming from the mind. There's nothing wrong with our bodies. Our mind has created sleep in a negative experience that has to be undone. Certainly, overall life stress is something that we have to be able to work with, allowing people to reprocess different times of life. We saw this a lot in COVID, both in the simple, the unknown, the inability to go out, the people getting sick around them or themselves getting sick, having to deal with the medical system that themselves were oftentimes confused about which way to go. So stress definitely can contribute to a poor night's sleep. Trauma as well. And this one is a little bit more elusive and sometimes a little bit harder to pin down, but you could have a client that's 40, 50, 60 years old and having sleep issues for an unresolved trauma that happened when they were 3 or 6 or 9 or 12 years old. Because when the mind stores, don't fall asleep. There's something to be afraid of. Don't allow yourself to be vulnerable. So the body actually stores that working memory. And completely subconsciously, we can have things from our past that affect our present in a very real way. I'm working with another client who, when she was 9 years old, chas v'shalom, that she had a car accident. She was sleeping in the car and her father was driving the car, lost control of the wheel, hitting ice. The father died on impact. She woke up to screaming and broken glass and the sirens and everything. And you can understand why she has a sleep issue. She has an unresolved trauma with being in that accident, seeing her father die, and then storing that now as don't fall asleep. It's going to be dangerous for you. So trauma is definitely something that has to be worked with. And I'll just share this idea because it's not something that's super well known, but it's something called paradoxical insomnia, or in other terms, they call it pseudo insomnia, where a person can actually kind of think that they're not sleeping, and therefore they become hyper aroused, and therefore they actually don't sleep. It's like a subtle point to really pin down, but essentially the person has like a misappropriated sleep cycle. They come to me and says, I never fall asleep, I don't sleep. And it could be they don't, by the way. But what happens is that because they're checking and they're monitoring and they've kind of come up with this false conclusion, they actually keep themselves hypervigilant throughout the night and don't fall asleep. So we have to kind of untie this, their mind from the inside out. Those are just, again, some of the basic issues. And we will be happy to take any questions. In fact, I'm looking forward to your questions. Please note your questions, because at the end of the presentation, I really do want your questions. I think your questions will be much more valuable than anything that I have to share going through this. Okay, so let's talk about some of the ways that we use to cure, you know, up here, all of these issues. You're like, well, that sounds horrible. You know, you got anxiety, phobia, and stress, and trauma. How do we process that? So ultimately, I believe in people's ability to change. I don't care how old you are, whether you're 22 or 92, the brain has neuroplasticity. The brain has the ability to change. We can't overly complicate the human mind. The human mind runs off of a set of rules and parameters. And when you understand how the human mind operates, you're able to heal it from the inside. As a general principle, especially when people are struggling with mental health, they view their mind as the enemy, especially when it comes to insomnia and anxieties and phobias. They view it's this monster that their mind has created. But it's an important point to remind ourselves in a very real way that our minds are designed to help us and keep us alive and keep us safe. And when a person understands that my mind is not the enemy, my mind has just almost got a false alarm, as if, you know, the fire alarm is going off, but there really is no fire, as opposed to getting angry and running away from my mind, which is trying to get my attention, I have to be able to reprocess the mind and to be able to get the mind on board. So let me just explain what some of these psychological principles that we use, and I use in my practice. The typical classic modality for treating insomnia is cognitive behavioral therapy, a CBTI for insomnia. Although I believe a lot of the more progressive practitioners in the sleep world are actually, many of them are moving away from this model and adopting different models, which we'll speak about right now. CBTI, you might have heard of, it's based upon cognitive behavioral therapy in general, but oftentimes they'll use kind of having a strict bedtime and wake up time, no caffeine, you know, after 12 p.m., no screens late. If you can't fall asleep, get up and do something else. mind calming exercises, you know, more rules and regulations, and then helping kind of restructure the sleep cycle. And that definitely works for some people. That was considered the gold standard in insomnia, although I believe that in 15 or 20 years, we're actually going to be moving away from this model and moving towards some of the other models that I've described. ACT stands for acceptance and commitment therapy. While CBT would go out and be challenging your thoughts, ACT actually says become okay with your thoughts, become passive, accept your thoughts and allow them to be present in your mind. RTT, which is something that I personally learned in practice, is a style of hypnotherapy where we actually go into the subconscious mind and understand, like, especially, you know, if there's a trauma, if there are phobias and things like that, where are those coming from and how to release and reprocess any of those negative mental experiences and emotions. ERP stands for exposure and response prevention, which is classically used as OCD treatment. But if you think about it, you know, oftentimes OCD will come in as what's called pure O. And again, I know I'm throwing a lot of terms out, we're just covering a lot of information, but pure O is a pure obsessional thought. So you can have someone who gets into bed and says, are you going to sleep tonight? Are you going to sleep tonight? Are you going to sleep tonight? Take another sleeping pill, warm up the blanket, do this and that, making sure it's almost like an OCD regarding sleep. So we would want to treat it based upon where their mind is. And something called NATO, which is kind of the newest wave of sleep science, by a friend of mine, Daniel Erickson, who's a sleep coach, I believe, in New York. NATO stands for not attached to the outcome. It's really kind of creating almost a Chinese finger trap approach to sleep, because we all know that a Chinese finger trap, the harder you pull, the more your fingers get stuck in the trap. And so NATO actually teaches you to really kind of release the struggle, to stop fighting, to befriend wakefulness, to kind of train your mind out of that anxious state of fear that oftentimes insomnia can produce. Again, just talking in general terms, please write down your questions and we'll take them at the end. Okay, so this was all up to now, assuming you had a sleep issue and that sleep issue was in your mind. But what happens if it's not? You know, sleep issues are all in your mind until they're not. And what happens if sleep issues are in your body? Let me share with you a little bit about the difference between conventional medicine and functional medicine. And I'll start off with a story about myself. I myself had terrible psoriasis on my hands for a good 10 years of my life. My hands were constantly itchy, scratchy, bleeding, cracked. It was very painful. It was uncomfortable. It was socially uncomfortable. It was a very a challenging thing as a young man to grow up with. Being raised in a fairly traditional medical world, I decided, go to my doctors. That's what you do when you have a medical issue. And I remember going to many doctors, many top-rated dermatologists, and they would look at it and they would diagnose it as, yeah, you have psoriasis, extreme, acute, chronic, whatever they would call it. And they would prescribe me this cortisone cream and that cortisone cream and this treatment and that treatment. And this psoriasis would come and it would go and it would come and it would go. Really never got better. I was very frustrated. I thought I had this kind of incurable psoriasis disease. Until I kept asking them, like, well, why are my hands doing this? Where's this disease coming from? And they said, sir, there's no known cause for psoriasis. You just have to treat the symptoms. So, okay, doc, you got more letters after your name than I have toes, right? I gotta trust you. So lo and behold, 10 years later, after struggling with this for a good decade of my life, I happened to meet someone who practiced functional medicine, and I'll explain what that means in a second. But he asked me a question which changed my hands, changed my life, and it changed the way that I view healthcare in general. And he says, Daron, as opposed to keep trying to treat the symptoms on your hands, why don't we try to get to the root of the issue to understand why your body is in a state of inflammation? I said, I didn't know I could ask that, doctor. Really? There's a reason for this? Yeah, this is what functional medicine does. Let's try to see. And lo and behold, I realized it was entirely food related. I changed my diet. I cut out what were a lot of foods that were inflammatory to my system. And lo and behold, my psoriasis just went away. It went away. I've never needed another cortisone cream. My hands are not itchy. The situation just went away. Now, please don't take this as, I certainly do not mean to talk disparagingly upon, classic Western medical doctors. Western medicine has accomplished a tremendous amount and usually is the answer to most situations. But, and I'll put that with a button, a caveat, I find that there are certain situations that putting people into a box and trying to be symptom-oriented is not always the best approach. And my experience is oftentimes comes with skin issues, digestion issues, energy issues, mental health, and sleep, I view are the five areas that functional medicine, a more holistic view of the human being, both body and mind, putting those together. Functional medicine often tries to treat things in a natural way. They oftentimes view food as the main ingredient to our health. And therefore, they want to do the kind of testing, and we'll see those kind of testings in a second, of what they do. So I actually, since building out my practice, brought on a team of functional medicine doctors into my sleep practice because I realized that there is a certain caliber of testing that can be helpful. If people are getting older and they're not sleeping well, we want to understand why. Where is that breakdown happening? Where is the systems of our body that would not be producing great sleep? Where is that coming? And how can we, in a natural, holistic way, be able to affect change in that area? So I'm just going to move this screen over here. Here, put this down here. Okay, so I'm going to just run through some of the sample testing that they do. Now you can see the kind of questions they're asking. Like I said, I'm not a medical doctor. Don't take any medical conclusions on this. I just want to show you some of the testing that we'll do. So this is these are all sample tests. So these are not any one patient specifically, but these are this is the Dutch test out of Precision Analytical. Certainly one of the things we're looking at, especially for ladies, is the hormone question. As women especially get older, they go through menopause, hormone fluctuations, their sleep can get thrown off. Progesterone is a big part of the question. And I don't want to get into the whole discussion now of hormone replacement therapy, speak to your doctors about that. But the if one's progesterone is low or even below postmenopausal range, one should think about how that's affecting in general out of the hormones. Progesterone is considered a calming hormone, and one who's low in progesterone generally will not produce a great sleep cycle. Another couple of points over here is your cortisol pattern. If you imagine kind of your sleep-wake pattern, and this is where functional medicine, as opposed to just looking at this as a one-time blood test, they're really taking a look at your whole patterns throughout the day, because sleep, a good night's sleep, is born out of a strong day. You have a great day, you're active, you're healthy, you have energy, it's going to produce great sleep at night. Cortisol patterns are looking not only at your over cortisol production, but they're looking at the patterns. You have a good rise in the morning. Is it coming down in the afternoon and then at night? And I've seen this graph be all over the place. And oftentimes that can be very helpful and indicative in terms of what's going on over here. Oftentimes as people get older, their DHEA. DHEA, imagine DHEA is the core building block that comes into all of our hormones. Their DHEA, you can see naturally as a person gets older, it gets lower. But depending on where that breakdown is happening, it could be that the DHEA is a safe, again, speak to your doctor, but a safe over-the-counter supplement, that supplementing with DHA, if DHEA is lacking, can be very helpful in giving our body the raw material that we need. I'm just going to jump down over here. You can see as DHEA kind of comes in to the cycle and will then produce the DHEAs and come into all of the hormone metabolites to be able to produce this. So if one is low in the DHEA, oftentimes, low DHEA can be associated with sleep issues. I just want to come down here and point out a couple of things. Another big question is melatonin, right? What happened to the melatonin production? And many times people will prescribe melatonin without actually measuring it. And I think that's a little bit crazy because we want to know, is the melatonin low or not? Obviously, if you have a low melatonin level, you're not going to be sleeping well. You're not going to be staying asleep throughout the night. If your melatonin levels are robust and still you're not sleeping, as opposed to prescribing you more melatonin, we have to try to figure out why. Even if one is low on melatonin, there's natural ways to be able to repair that. And again, you know, these are just some of the things that the doctors are looking at. B6, B12, glutathione are important. Neurotransmitters are important. And oxygen stress, again, all of these things come in. I realize that we have a lot to say, and we've only gone through a few slides. So I'll just quickly run through some of the other tests that they do. This is called the organic acids test. And these things can just be really indicative of like an overall functional medicine test that runs through hundreds of markers in your body. They can give my doctors a real strong picture on what's going on. Is there infection? Is there inflammation? Is there bacteria? Is there yeast? Is there mold? We're finding all sorts of interesting things. And oftentimes these things can be missed in the conventional sense. And therefore it is something that we want to look at. Another helpful tool is a comprehensive stool analysis. Maimonides famously said that the prime aspect of our health comes from our digestion. And I believe that functional medicine believes that. 100%. So much of our overall health comes from our digestion. If we have poor digestion for whatever reason, that can really throw off our health in many ways. It fascinatingly, we actually don't produce our neurotransmitters of dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine. We don't produce them in our brain. We produce them in our gut. And when the gut is off, there's a very strong gut-mind connection. And we want the gut to be healthy to be able to produce all the things that we need in our mind. You know, and when we're looking at the stool, it's not just, are you digesting well or not, but they're looking inside your intestines. It's a whole biome. There's a whole zoo in there of bacteria, of yeast, of fungi, and all these things. And so they want to see exactly what's going on. Are you low in your good bacteria? Are you dysbiotic? Do you have too much of the bad bacteria? Is there yeast? Is there flora? What's going on? And they're able to look exactly breaking this down. Do you have pathogenic bacteria? Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying these are the kind of things that they want to look at to be able to determine where is that breakdown happening. And especially if one has IBS, if they have Crohn's, if they have indigestion, if they know they have these things, this can be a super helpful tool and marker to be able to understand that. But let's get back to our slides. I know we got a lot to discuss. Okay. So this is actually a helpful tool. And again, if one wants to decide whether they have a sleep condition or not, this is an Oura Ring. An Oura Ring is a device you can buy and put on your finger. And you can get these reports at home. And you can see kind of the breakdown. How much are you in REM? How much are you in light? How much are you deep? And you can see, do I have a sleep issue or do I not? Let's just move this chart here. Oops. Okay. The second question one might ask is, aside from the psychological and the physical aspect that could be getting in the way of our sleep, is the issue in your breathing? Do you have an issue breathing at night, both with apnea and snoring? Apnea is a underdiagnosed disorder. Apnea is essentially, to break it down, when sleeping, their throat collapses on themselves. It's called obstructive sleep apnea. They become deoxygenated, as we'll see the reports in a second, and that will have havoc all in their body. It will break their sleep cycle and prevent them from going into deep, restful, restorative sleep. It has long-term health issues, including diabetes, weight gain, heart disease. I mean, many things are linked to apnea. And 80%, like I said, of the conditions of apnea are not, they go underdiagnosed. And therefore, if you are concerned, one of the first places I recommend people looking is to decide if they have apnea. These are just a couple of reports over here. This is a home device that I send my clients to be able to see. As all, you can compare the two clients. This is your oxygen throughout the night. This is a young man. You can see 21 years old, starting off, you know, in the upper range. And basically, this is a perfect night. And you can see that oxygen is staying above the dotted line at 94%. Fantastic. This guy doesn't have apnea. This guy does have apnea, okay? 66-year-old male, overweight. And you can see where his oxygen is just all over the place at night. And he's very tired in the day. And we know why. We'll talk about it in a second how to cure apnea. But my point is that you really, knowledge is power. You want to know if this is going on while you're sleeping. Okay, so curing your breathing sleep issues, there's traditionally three approaches when it comes to apnea. Number one is the CPAP machine, the quantitative positive air pressure machine. It's a device your doctor will prescribe and will be able to fit it to your mouth that will make sure that oxygen is moving well in and out of your mouth throughout the night. The second option is the mandibular device, a little bit less invasive, it's less bulky. It's a device that dentists would make that kind of sets your jaw a little bit forward to be able to open up the airways, can be less, so to say, obtrusive than the CPAP, sometimes less effective. So again, certainly you can discuss those options with your doctor, but those are kind of the two classic medicals. Sometimes if they can tell there's a deviated septum or something like that, they'll recommend surgery. But again, each one of those decisions to discuss with your doctor. Many times clients come to me and they say, Daron, I can't do the CPAP. I can't sleep with the thing on my face. I'm just not doing it, but I have apnea, or, you know, I tried the mandibular device. It threw off my jaw. It gave me pain. I can't do it. I need another option. So at that point I come and I present a holistic methodology to be able to help with this situation. And I'll describe the five areas that we go into to be able to help to cure apnea naturally without the need of a device. Not that I'm anti-device, I just want to give people the option. Number one element when it comes to curing apnea is weight loss. There's a very clear link between obesity, which is another massive struggle that our society deals with, and apnea. If you get yourself down to your ideal body mass index, you're most often your apnea will very much subside. In addition to the apnea, you want to take a look at the food and drinks when you're eating it and how you're eating. Certainly anything you're eating close to bed, heavier foods, alcohol, anything like that can exacerbate the apnea. So we want to be able to clear that up. I also have a program that I help retrain people's natural breathing mechanism, their posture and their tongue to be able to optimize and to be able to really dial in all of the biomechanical elements that the apnea is not going to occur. And therefore we can avoid the device or fix the situation if a device in such a situation is not possible. Okay, let's ask the question, because up to now we've been speaking about sleep issues, which is certainly something I'm very passionate about. Let's ask the question, does your chronic fatigue have nothing to do with sleep? Maybe, Daron, I sleep fine, really. I get 8 hours of sleep every night. I sleep restfully. I don't have apnea. I'm sleeping great, but I'm constantly tired throughout the day. So let's address that side of the equation, and let's address this as the title of the talk was, body, mind, and soul. So let's dive into these three areas. What could be going on with your body? Like I said, certainly go to your doctor, get checked out, get blood work done, you know, follow the basic medical protocol. But if they're not picking up anything, then we might want to think outside the box. Number one issue I see when it comes to treating chronic fatigue that's not, doesn't have a clear trigger in another sense, is with food. Folks, the reality is that our American diet is not healthy for us. It's not primed. It's not fuel for our body. We're putting a lot of junk into our system, and it's not doing us any favors. One, oftentimes I'll recommend an elimination diet to cut out many foods that are just not geared for what our bodies need. I recommend cutting out dairy. I recommend cutting out gluten. I recommend cutting out sugar. I had a woman cry on me this week because I told her those three things. And she told me, she says, you know, Daron, I'd rather be chronically exhausted than cut those three foods out of my diet. I said, okay, that's your decision to make and I'm here to empower you. But I just want to realize that those foods are in so much of our snack foods, so much of our products, certainly as part of the Jewish community with the challah and the cholent and the potato kugel and all the processed oils and the starches and all those kind of things. Wonderful food. I appreciate being Ashkenazi, but many times it does not do great for our health. I'll share with you, and we'll come back to this slide. This is a book written by a colleague of mine named Ari Witten. Ari Witten was someone who struggled with chronic exhaustion for many years. I believe Ari is actually Jewish. And Ari wrote a book called Eat for Energy, where he goes through and he breaks down in a natural, holistic way how to be able to literally eat oneself out of chronic exhaustion and be fueling our body with the food that we need. So I recommend that book. You can check that out on Amazon. Just getting back to this issue. So food is a very big thing. In chronic exhaustion, I would challenge you. For a month, try an elimination diet. Try to cut out a lot of the triggering processed chemical foods that our bodies are not designed. Go for a diet that is whole, that is natural. Again, I'm not giving specific diet advice. Everyone is different. But to think about, wait, could it be that I'm eating triggering foods that are sending my body into a state of inflammation? That was my life. My hands were on fire for 10 years because I was putting the wrong foods that my body needed into my diet. And when I changed that, my skin condition just went away. And therefore, I really believe in the fact that a lot of our healthcare can be changed when we change the way that we eat. Like we discussed earlier, GI issues can be a big factor in all this. If you think about our digestive tract, as almost, you know, that's the fuel source. That's where all the food comes in. And besides for the Crohn's, besides for the IBS, besides for all the issues that we're seeing, but to be able to understand this issue over here, what fuel is it able to absorb or not absorb? This is such a core area to our energy production. Mold and toxins, like we saw about in those tests, these are very silent issues. These are not issues that are well known. But like I said, I just had a client who had major psychiatric issues on all sorts of medications, not helping. We just ran testing. We just realized she had mold, and now we're helping her to take those steps to be able to improve that. In toxins as well, understanding, is there chemical toxins where they expose? You know, again, I can tell story after story. I know we don't have a super amount of time, but just to think about what has my body exposed to, what is it being exposed to on a constant basis, and how can I be able to help that? The last situation is mitochondria. Mitochondria are the tiny little energy factories within our cells. And if there's mitochondrial breakdown, so then, you know, we obviously we're not feeling that energy. In fact, all energy deficiency really does come from a mitochondrial breakdown. There are many supplements I can recommend. Please contact me, and we could see what we can do if at what point of the process where the testing would determine that the breakdown of our body's energy production has gone awry. Okay. Let's speak about for a moment the idea of the mind-based chronic fatigue. You know, and this you might be saying, well, what does that mean? Like, I'm just making it up, or I'm really depressed. The mind is an incredibly powerful organ, a really powerful part of our body, however you understand the mind itself. It's so powerful that the mind can cause very real physiological issues. This is not someone who's just, they're not a hypochondriac that is making things up. Oh, I'm sad and therefore I'm pretending to feel tired. No, 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 no. Your mind can be holding on to trauma, pain, emotional blockage, whatever it is, and the mind can create very real physical symptoms in your body. I'll come back to this slide. I just want to jump forward to a second. This is a book written by a mentor of mine. Her name is Marissa Peer. Marissa Peer is a award-winning hypnotherapist. She's the lady that I studied hypnotherapy under as well. She wrote a book called Trying to Get Pregnant and Succeeding. You can look it up on Amazon. See the hundreds, if not thousands, of babies that have been delivered after doctors told couples that they were infertile. There was no way that this woman was going to get pregnant. They tried every infertility path known to man. And what they didn't realize is that it could be that their mind was sabotaging their own fertility. You're like, what? How does that even make sense? So I'll tell you an example. Let's say you have a woman who, you know, I don't know. Let's say you have an example. She got pregnant when she was 16. And her mother says, you know, if you go through with this pregnancy, you're just going to kill me. You're going to ruin my life. You have to abort the child. I don't want to get into any of the complications of that going on in this country right now. But when she was 16, she heard those words, if I have a baby, I'm going to kill my mother. And therefore, the mind said, don't conceive. Not worth it. You're going to cause too much pain. Even though there was it was a flippant comment when she was a teenager, she can hold that memory in her subconscious mind for decades of her life, and her body will react in suit and not be able to conceive. Don't believe me. I know this sounds like voodoo. This sounds so weird. But Marissa Peer wrote a book. Go on and read the hundreds of ladies that delivered babies based upon using the power of unlocking their mind. That's what she wrote a book on. It's unbelievable. Our mind is that powerful. So I want to just go back to the idea that could it be that if all the other physical symptoms, you don't have sleep issues, you're totally healthy in every way, could it be that your mind is sabotaging your body? Why you would do this? I don't know. That's where hypnotherapy comes in. But that is something that I can't ignore because I've seen time and time again, the mind can be a very powerful trigger, a very powerful tool to be able to unlock all of this. And I'll just share this quote with you. The feeling that cannot find itself an expression in tears will cause other organs to weep. If we're not able to process those pent-up emotions, then oftentimes those can cause havoc on our body, including in chronic fatigue. Like we said, the power of the subconscious mind, John Sarno's book, Healing Back Pain, and he's written a number of books since then, was really all based upon this. It was based upon the idea that our mind can be creating the issue, and by healing the mind from the inside, we can allow the issue to go away. Okay, now he's on. Let's just speak about some other mind-based chronic fatigues. Definitely anxiety and depression are two things that are rampant in our generation. And when one's mind is down, when one's mind is anxious, when they're crippled by these negative emotions and thoughts that are in their mind, it can have a very real effect on their body. They cannot want to move. They can feel sluggish. They don't want to get out of bed in a physical way. It's not just that they're not in the mood to get out of bed, but it literally weighs down on their mind. I'm lacking goals and drive, meaning, and purpose. I would say these are super important things, especially as people get older. You know, when we're younger, we're kind of put on a conveyor belt that, yeah, you know, I go to school, I have to go here, I got to get my job, I got to get married, I got to build my home, got to have my career. We're kind of on a conveyor belt that we have society almost kind of creating our goals and our drives for us. But as we get older, as people retire, at that point now, that goal and that drive really becomes within them. But it's very important for them to remain active, to have their goals, to be able to set their sights on their accomplishment, to find meaning and purpose in what they're doing, These things are so important, not just from a religious sense, which I believe they are, but just from a human being sense, that we feel what we're doing matters. We feel our actions are important. It gives us energy, as we say in Judaism. It gives us chios. It gives us life. Famously, they describe the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, the great Rabbi Eliyahu Kramer of Vilna, he only slept 2 hours a night. He only slept four half an hour nap intervals. And besides for being a prodigy and a very unique person, I don't recommend doing that. I believe, as I know, part of his superhuman strength that he had came from living a life of meaning and purpose and goals and being driven in that. And we've all felt that when we feel that we're excited, when there's a big event coming up, when we feel we're very passionate about a cause, or we're learning something, or we're developing something, we almost feel this extra energy. So sometimes you can imagine that if we have no goals, no drive, no meaning and purpose, our mind creates that fatigue in our body. So really to be able to unravel that and to be able to use the power of the mind, use the power of our own motivation, and really to be able to create that meaning and purpose in our life. And this is a beautiful quote from Viktor Frankl, who was a famous psychotherapist that was unfortunately in Auschwitz in the Holocaust. He says, "The quest for meaning is the key to mental health and human flourishing." This is a quote from his beautiful book, Man's Search for Meaning, where he describes that man needs meaning in his life. The key to mental health and human flourishing. Obviously, we all want to be healthy. We all want to flourish. And understanding that finding meaning in what we're doing in life at whatever age we are, wherever we are in health, wherever life takes us, to be able to tap into that meaning and understanding what we're doing is very significant. Okay, here's a little about me. Feel free. So I know we've spoken about a lot. Again, this was not meant to be conclusive or come to any medical conclusions based upon this. But I do want to offer, if anyone would like to reach out to me, I'm happy to see how I can be of assistance, happy to offer a free consultation to anybody who's in need. Here is my work cell phone and my website and my email address. I spoke to Mrs. Steinig, and we'll be able to send that information out to the follow-up email as well. But I'm happy to open the floor up to any questions, and I will I'll stop the screen share.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Lazarus. I think we all learned a tremendous amount, and I'm sure that everyone will appreciate having your contact info afterwards. Okay, I have one question here. I don't know if you have more. Somebody wants to know if there is a self-assessment tool for individuals to use at home to help clarify their status in terms of sleep needs. Does that exist?
Yeah, so one great option is the Oura Ring. It's O-U-R-A. And that's it's a very simple device you can buy and have a sleep test, have a sleep ring to be able to track. I think that's one of the more popular devices in terms of overall sleep. Emay makes a pulse oximeter, which you can buy on Amazon and be able to see your blood oxygen at night if you're concerned for apnea. So I would say in terms of sleep, those are kind of the simple over-the-counter devices that anybody can get.
Okay. Another question. If you don't drink enough, can that cause exhaustion?
Yeah, 100%. I'm assuming by you mean drinking water. Too much alcohol is not good for anybody.
It specifically said water.
Right, yes. Not drinking water. Definitely important to remain hydrated. My perspective on hydration is it should be done based upon thirst. Many times we get out of touch with our bodies, and we're following some generic rule of everyone needs to drink, 8 liters of water a day or something, and we're over diluting ourselves. I don't think that's healthy either. I think we have to be in touch with our body, follow our self-awareness, and to be able to drink appropriately. So whether it's water, flavored water, seltzer, or whatever, but yes, to remain hydrated with healthy hydration throughout the day, I think is important.
Okay. Another question just came in, but I'm just going to, anybody who has a question, please put it into the chat. We only take questions through the chat. What are your thoughts about the possible post-COVID chronic fatigue syndrome issue?
Right. Yeah, no, this is a serious issue. It's something that people are struggling with a lot. The medical world, as COVID was happening, and now we're seeing in the post-COVID situation, to understand, where is that coming from? And more importantly, how to be able to treat it. So these are the kind of things that I find that my functional medicine doctors really want to understand. It's not a question of, did you have COVID or not? It's not a question of also the mystery of what did COVID do? Let's see, where has your body been thrown off? We're only now discovering the long-term effects of where COVID was. So the kind of the broad-based functional medicine testing that they can do can really to be able to pinpoint, isolate, and to be able to treat where, you know, COVID caused an imbalance. And it could be in 100 people came out in different ways. So I think it's really important for people to do the right testing to be able to see where did that damage happen and how can they best repair that situation.
Okay, what about the issue of your actual bedding, the kind of pillow you have, your mattress, the temperature of the room, all that kind of stuff? How does that, you know, affect?
Right. As a general principle, I recommend people have a comfortable, you know, a decent mattress, a comfortable pillow. The room should be cool and the bed should be warm, you know, as a general principle. Oftentimes what I get is people become overly obsessed with the details of that and they need only their pillow and only this mattress and the room has to be exactly this temperature and totally quiet and totally dark. And that those things can actually be anxiety producing. So I think one has to really judge the situation. Is it coming from a place that I need to be in control of everything? In which case, sometimes running after those details actually makes things worse. Or, you know, is there a kind of a basic, certainly if you have a, you know, poor neck support with a pillow or a very old mattress that's not offering you back support or your room is too hot or too cold, I think those are obvious things to look out for. But I don't recommend all my clients go and run and get a $10,000 mattress because somehow that's magically going to make you sleep better.
Is it normal to remember dreams often? And how do dreams affect sleep? I assume exhaustion.
Sure. Yeah. So we all dream at night. There's a question about whether people remember their dreams. We remember our dreams for one of two reasons. Number one, the dreams were so vivid that they're so dramatic that they wake us up in the middle of them. At that point, we remember them. Or if we're anyways waking up frequently throughout the night, which as people get older, they tend to do, so we will remember more of our dreams. Dream interpretation is something that I do. And I would say for most people, disregard your dreams. Your dreams were just, you know, flutterings of your subconscious mind. If there are repeated vivid nightmares or very disturbing dreams or things that are coming back with great intensity, that would be something that I would want to explore and understand. The dreams are just a window into our subconscious mind. So if they are repeating themselves, to ask the question, what is our mind trying to tell us and how to decipher that code?
I don't see any. Do you have any questions waiting for you in the chat? Because I don't see anything else here.
Oh, sure. Let me take a look.
If anybody else wants to send something in, please don't hesitate. Do it right now.
Okay. Yeah, I got a few direct messages here. How can you stop yourself from waking up one or more times during the night, often with a headache for which I have to take pills? I'm not exactly sure if I understand the question. It would seem that a person has chronic headaches, and therefore they're waking up from the headache. It's not something that I could address off the top of my head. I would recommend speaking to your doctor and finding out what the source of the headaches is. I'm happy to make a time to talk. You can go into my website and we can speak, but I can't answer that off the chat. Another question is, I'm supposed to use a CPAP, but I cannot because it's too uncomfortable and let me sleep. Is there a good alternative to the CPAP? So yeah, so that would be either going back to the mandibular device that a dentist would make, or we can try a holistic option to be able to, you know, work on weight loss, food, breathing, posture, and tongue, which I feel can be very effective as well. I have found that I have acid reflux. I have found that acid reflux can wake you up. Yes, acid reflux can wake you up. It is important to understand what foods are triggering that and be to deal with those symptoms. Direct message, is it possible to measure blood melatonin levels in the common daytime blood test? If not, then how? I don't know. I mean, generally they want to see, you know, because melatonin is you know, kind of pulsing out of your system. So they usually want to see it first thing in the morning. So the Dutch test, which we saw, they're usually taking 4 urine tests throughout the day, first thing in the morning, an hour into the day, afternoon and evening. And that way they can see your melatonin right as you wake up, which is usually the best time to get it. Can we get a link via email to see the presentation again? I think Mrs. Steinig will send that out. Yes. I fall asleep watching TV between 8 and 10. When I go to bed, I'm not sleepy anymore. Yeah, that's definitely something that's quite common. I, you know, would have to understand in terms of the overall sleep cycle, you know, if you're falling asleep at 8, what time are you waking up? And to be able to say, okay, maybe I don't want to be watching TV while either sitting on a couch. If I want to watch TV, maybe I should sit up in a chair or do something that's less likely for me to fall asleep. But yes, going to bed too early can be problematic. Does shallow breathing cause sleep apnea? What's the best way at home to screen if I have sleep apnea? No, I don't believe shallow breathing does cause sleep apnea. I actually view it the exact opposite. I view people who overly breathe taking huge breaths in. Those are the kind of breaths that exacerbate the apnea. What I train people in is to actually have a very small tidal volume, shallow in and out, consistent breathing schedule. And that actually helps with the apnea. So I would recommend, if you want to screen, so either speak to your doctor about having an in-clinic or at-home sleep study, or you can buy the EMI pulse oximeter on Amazon. Let's see what's going on over here. I think that's all the questions that I have. One more question. Is it a good idea to keep the radio on? No, I don't recommend keeping the radio on when you sleep. Again, depending, sometimes people like background noise to fall asleep. It helps kind of drown out their mind. But I think we better sleep in silence if possible.
Okay. I don't have any other questions here. I want to thank Rabbi Lazarus for such a informative, wonderful program. So the question regarding the recording, our plan is always to send out the recording to everyone who's registered. And if you're watching it or listening to it, you've registered. So you don't have to ask, you will get it with God's help either later today or tomorrow. Sometimes it takes an extra day, and we will have the contact info with it. And then we will be adding you to our spirit list so that you can hear about other programs. If you're new to this program, please tell your friends. Normally we do it on Tuesday morning, just like we're doing now. Although I have to tell you, we are taking a break. This is our last program until August. We'll be back then, but you will be receiving emails letting you know what's going on and how you can register at that point. So just keep track and watch out for your emails. Thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi Lazarus. Everybody have a wonderful day. Be safe, be healthy, and we look forward to seeing you back. Take care.
Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure.